The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you. Hopefully you had a nice, relaxing or rejuvenating weekend. It's good to see the week starting off on such a high note, as it always does, with this program, with thetrumpet.com, with the literature that we send out. We had a program here, by the way, that advertised the correspondence course, and as per usual, the interest level, not as high as we would have hoped. But as I was saying to Sam earlier, hopefully we've got some new students to that course that will stay with it all the way through to the final lesson. Speaking of literature and what this church continually puts out, I just previewed the forthcoming coworker letter. My father's going to send this out this week. He made this point early on in the letter, saying, under Satan's influence, this sick world has grown deathly ill. The end-time nations of Israel especially have been hit hard with the economic curses associated with COVID-19, and at the same time are suffering unprecedented lawlessness in our cities. Many people are succumbing to despair. We'll talk more about this as we proceed in this segment. But it says here, but God's work is pressing forward. In many ways, as the world declines, God has been blessing us, encouraging and inspiring us even more. He makes the point that as the world breaks apart, that God's work is really soaring. Now, we've had to adapt and to adjust, and we've had to be flexible for sure with the craziness of this past year. But he mentions in the opening couple of pages in this coworker letter about the Celtic Throne performance over the summer and some of the changes we made to the summer educational program. Of course, we're gearing up for the fall festivals as well. Speaking of the Celtic Throne, by the way, that album is now available for streaming on Spotify. And you can also download it or purchase it at iTunes. And we're hoping to make it available too, I think, on Google Play. So if you enjoyed that show from July, many of you saw it on the live stream, the video of that production. If you enjoyed the music, you can now download that or purchase that and listen to it, as I often do every day. Coming up on today's show, the second segment, we're going to be talking about sports and how it's been politicized. Really is sad to see what's happened to so many of these professional leagues, particularly in the United States, as they've just gone all in with these Marxist movements, and they're losing viewers, they're losing fans, and yet still, they're all in, and they all speak with one voice anymore. I mean, it's very unusual and even controversial if someone stands up and salutes the flag. Just a few years ago, it was the opposite. It was controversial if someone took a knee. Now they all take a knee. That's not even news anymore. Now you're the center of controversy if you just stand at attention for the national anthem. We'll talk more about that in the second segment. First, though, I want to begin with these prophecies about blotting out Israel. You're very familiar with this, I know. Psalm 83, for example, this alliance there that comes together, well, it certainly divides the Middle East in two. But there's an alliance there in Psalm 83 that has the objective of blotting out Israel. Verse 4, it says, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. So it's talking about the nations of Israel. This psalm reveals that when Europe comes together against the King of the South, the Middle East, as we know, is going to be divided up into those two power blocks. And then those nations rallying around Germany, the German-led European empire. They're going to go after Israel. The aim is, as you read there in verse 4, to blot out the name of Israel. That's the ultimate goal of so many of these enemy nations, to bring down the United States, to bring down Britain. Of course, you're familiar with 2 Kings 14, where it says that God said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. So God intervened. He's intervened in these last days to temporarily save Israel, to give us one final opportunity to consider these many prophecies of God, to consider what God says about our nations. Nations in peril, as my father's coworker letter brings out. This was President Trump from last week. I know we played quite a few clips from his RNC speech on Thursday night. Here's one, just to play it again, clip 3.
Together we have ended the rule of the failed political class, and they are desperate to get their power back by any means necessary. You've seen that. They are angry at me because instead of putting them first, I very simply said America first.
That's President Trump there saying that they're angry at him and they'll do anything to regain power. And we have seen that. They'll do anything that they can to return to power. They've pulled out all the stops this year. You've got the pandemic, the way that they've politicized that. You've got the burning and the rioting. And then you've got all these attempts, these efforts now to cheat their way to a victory. They just can't seem to get anything right. They can't seem to find that, whatever it is, to take down this president. He keeps bouncing back. He went on in this speech to talk about this history of the United States, a positive view of history. That's unusual today. A positive view of America's history. Clip 4.
What united generations past was an unshakable confidence in America's destiny, and an unbreakable faith in the American people. They knew that our country is blessed by God and has a special purpose in this world. It is that conviction that inspired the formation of our union, our westward expansion, the abolition of slavery, the passage of civil rights, the space program, and the overthrow of fascism, tyranny, and communism.
A nation blessed by God and one that has a special purpose. You don't see these coming from the professional sports leagues today. All of their representatives out in front of the cameras saying that America is a racist nation, that America is just full of sin and hate. Well, we certainly have our sins. There's no doubt about that. But to erase God from our history, is that what we want to do? Do we want to remove God from the story? The United States and Britain in prophecy, God has something to say about our nations. He has a lot to say about the astonishing rise to power in the 19th and 20th centuries. And here we are, gasping for our last breaths. Our nations deeply divided. So much hatred and strife. So much violence in the streets. In the U.S., we have a talk radio commentator. The most popular one in the United States is Rush Limbaugh, and he's been battling cancer this year. He's been through a lot of chemotherapy treatments And so he's missed a lot of programs, and I think he missed all of his shows last week, which, of course, his listeners are eager to hear what his take is on the Republican National Convention. He recorded a segment for his show on Friday, 10 or 15 minutes, I think it was, because he, as he revealed in that segment, he came down with an infection. So his health still, he's hoping to be back on the air, I guess, this week, but his health is still really holding him back. But he made some, in this 10 or 15 minute segment that he recorded for his show on Friday, he had this observation regarding the Republican National Convention. And this again was on his show Friday, clip one.
Hey, look at the Republican convention. It's been the most diverse political convention I've ever seen, including Democrat conventions. And as I've watched it, it has occurred to me Trump isn't just running for re-election. The story that is being told at the Republican National Convention is about saving America.
That's perhaps the best-known commentator on radio in the United States. The story coming out from that convention is about saving America. Saving America. Here again, you hear it here first. Tomorrow's news today. You go back to that article in The Trumpet, May, June, 2018. Saving America from the radical left temporarily. This is the concluding paragraph. My father wrote, "Read Great Again." That's one of the booklets that we've produced. Read Great Again to understand just how urgent this warning is. Read The United States and Britain in Prophecy to see what is about to happen to America. God is giving these warnings in an effort to save people from that fate. He's saving this nation temporarily, extending mercy for a short while before the punishment is carried out. And then my father says this, "Use this opportunity to prove this truth. Heed the warning and accept God's offer of protection to you." That's why God's delayed the captivity. He's put it off. He saved us temporarily. He didn't want our name to be blotted out by the radical left. And so he's intervened. And here's the Republican National Convention now. And a theme coming out from that. So says Rush Limbaugh. It's about saving America. Here's the rest of his statement from Friday's show, clip two.
It has occurred to me Trump isn't just running for re-election. The story that is being told at the Republican National Convention is about saving America. It's about saving America from a race war that the Democrats are out there actively trying to promote. They're trying to foment it.
Saving America from destroying itself. From a race war. From civil war. You look at Kenosha, by the way. We had a lot to say about that last week for obvious reasons. Speaking of civil war, speaking of the seeds that have been planted, as one of those articles we read last week said, the genie's out of the bottle. You look at the violence in Kenosha, and then it continues right over to Portland. One Trump supporter being shot in cold blood on the streets of Portland over the weekend. I'll come to that in just a second. But Kenosha, there's an article at The Federalist that says, corporate media didn't report what it's really like in Kenosha, Wisconsin, so I will. So it's mainly these video bloggers, these independent journalists, or an outfit like The Federalist, that have to go in there and actually show us the war zone that it is. Because the major media, they will not do it. Even local leadership, in many cases, they won't do it. President Trump's planning to visit Kenosha, by the way, on, I think, Tuesday, tomorrow. And the Wisconsin governor, Tony Evers, he's told the president of the United States, "You're not welcome." Can you even imagine this? A governor telling the United States president, "Don't come to our state. You're not welcome here." Well, the truth of it is, he's got something to hide. He doesn't want his lack of leadership, his terrible leadership, exposed. You take a tour through war-torn Kenosha, and that shocks American sensibilities. That shocks people. How could this be happening in the United States? The Sunday Times, here in the UK, it says the charred ruins of Kenosha endanger Joe Biden's march to presidency. See, it's endangering his march. It's hurting him politically, so how are the media going to dutifully help him? Well, cover it up. Don't talk about it. Just don't even bring it up, and hopefully people won't know how bad it really is. The people in Kenosha know how bad it is. Here it takes the Sunday Times, of course. Well, you've got a few exceptions, like I said, the Federalist and some independent video bloggers. But oftentimes, when the major media won't pick it up in the U.S., you have to come over here to the U.K. just to get a good in-depth study or story on the subject. What a shame. Where's CNN? Why isn't CNN walking through the streets, surrounded by these charred buildings, all these burned out cars, all these destroyed businesses? The Sunday Times says, after days of unrest, parts of Kenosha look more like war-torn Syria than Wisconsin. The devastation is sickening. Car showrooms are burnt out, with rows of scorched vehicles still emitting an acrid smoke. Entire buildings have been reduced to rubble. The damage is worst in Kenosha's Uptown neighborhood, the heart of its black community, where hair salons, ice cream parlors, faith missions, and grocery stores all smolder in ruins. See, it devastates the black community in particular. You think the major networks want that message to get out? Says some of the city may never recover, said Amy Hansen, 37, a third-generation local. There's people that won't come back from this. Buildings that were here in my grandmother's time, they've been destroyed. Says every shop front in the center is boarded up. Many now have colorful murals and pictures painted on them, bearing slogans of hope and solidarity. Some have more plaintive messages to keep prospective arsonists away. Kids live upstairs. Kids live here. Leave us alone. Don't destroy us. Don't burn us down. We've got children. This is Kenosha, Wisconsin. Wisconsin. It quotes one local professor saying the vigilante groups in the state, they're on red alert. They're ready to take action. We saw a bit of that last week. These militia groups showing up to protect the property, and then the clashes that ensued between them and the Black Lives Matter movement. And then now you have them squaring off in Portland. Who supports Trump? Who's with Antifa? It's building. The Sunday Times says is it time for Joe Biden's campaign to put clear water between itself and the destruction in Kenosha, or the recent looting in Minneapolis, or the protesters who surrounded and threatened Senator Rand Paul as he left the White House after the president's convention speech on Thursday? It says, by failing to vociferously condemn the violence, have Democrats sown the seeds of their own destruction? Are they really on the side of rioting and lockdowns and face masks? Listen to this Wisconsin man. He's evidently from Kenosha or nearby. Clip 6.
I think Kenosha's going to vote for President Trump in the upcoming election. I think we need him here. We need strong leadership. People that are born and raised here are disgusted and angry with what's happened.
There's one local. Of course, that's a very small sampling, I realize. But what are people thinking when you have these prominent Democrats, when you have the governor of the state saying, get out of here, President Trump. We don't want you. Even when the city's already been burned to the ground, don't come in here. You would think most people would want the president to come in to view the devastation, to offer assistance, to offer encouragement. But everything is so intensely politicized. Even when it's all said and done, the governor says, no thanks, stay away. It says here, Kenosians are divided on the merits of the protests, but many believe these events could end up helping Donald Trump in November. We have 300 federal law enforcement officers in town now, with another 1,000 federal troops on the way, Nelson, the bar owner, said. So it quotes a few people, a few locals, and then it gives some of the history, the recent history, and then the longer history of riots and protests in the United States, and how that back in the 1960s helped Richard Nixon's campaign, as Americans saw all this violence on the streets. That, like I say, is in the Sunday Times, because there's a concerted effort in the U.S. media to blot it out. To blot it out, to not even cover it. But look, there's quite a few, there's millions and millions of Americans that see what's happening. There were several stories over the weekend, by the way, of C-SPAN as they covered the Republican National Convention. That's the supposedly neutral government channel, just shows all the government activities. So C-SPAN has this commentator that's basically got a line for Democrats to call in and then a line for Republicans to call in. And he just listens to Americans, I guess in this case, vent. But the thing about it is, the ones calling in on the Democratic line, C-SPAN was just deluged with Democrats saying that they're fed up and that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. Sam sent me an 8-minute montage. All these people, one after another after another. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I'm voting for Donald Trump. The Federalists had this to say. C-SPAN changed their open phone line labels after an overwhelming number of Democratic viewers called on Wednesday night proclaiming their support for President Trump in the upcoming election. It used to say, call this line if you're a Democrat, call this line if you're a Republican. Now it says, call this line if you support Joe Biden, and call this one if you support Donald Trump. They don't want to emphasize, they don't want to spotlight the fact that there's Democrats calling the Democrat line saying, we've had it. That's enough. We want some control in our cities. We don't want to see our cities go up in flames. Whether we're Democrats or Republicans, I'm for the one that's for law and order, pure and simple. Listen to this Democrat, who's now voting Republican, by the way, on Fox News. This is Leo Terrell, clip 7.
This is the reason why I'm voting Republican for the first time. What you just saw last night with Rand Paul and Vernon Jones, it doesn't make a difference what your skin color is. These are thugs out there attacking law-abiding citizens. And you know what? The Democrats now are lying, saying that, oh, we're in favor of law and order. They have let cities burn for 4 to 5 months, and President Trump has offered help, and they refuse. This is just outright shocking. And this form of allowing these criminals to run rampant in the streets without any recourse is going to haunt the Democrats, and that's why the polls are shifting, and that's why they're going to vote for the law and order president.
The law and order president, that's a mantle that President Trump's going to hold up proudly. So you go back the last few weeks, no real bump in the polls for Joe Biden when he announced that Kamala Harris was going to be his vice presidential candidate. No real bump in the polls for him when he had his DNC Zoom convention. That was 2 weeks ago. And then the RNC's last week. And now, as he said, you begin to see a shift in the polls. And we're 2 months out. Here's Tucker Carlson's take from Friday night, clip 5.
What separates American democracy from Taliban theocracy, for example, is that in America, people can disagree with one another and disagree with the government without fearing for their lives. This used to be obvious. It was the foundation of our civic life. And yet all of a sudden, Joe Biden could never say this out loud. His voters have destroyed cities across the country and murdered dozens of Americans. He must stay silent about that. But Donald Trump doesn't have to, and so he said it. And as a result, for the first time since the Wuhan coronavirus arrived here, the president seemed likely to win re-election. Democrats are watching carefully. They know this. They can smell something has changed. They know why. Normal people hate the violence they have unleashed.
That's Tucker Carlson from the end of last week, saying that for the first time since all these crises this year, for the first time, President Trump seems likely to win re-election. And so the Democrats are here in a very difficult position. And now they're coming out with some of these weak statements, denouncing the violence, they're being urged to do so by Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, the two talking heads that were fomenting it in June. They were encouraging it. Now they see it's hurting them. But look, when you can go back and see even these very politicians, Biden and his running mate, encouraging the violence, what they say today, if they change their tune, well, it doesn't seem or come across very sincere, does it? Listen to Kamala Harris from a statement she made in June, a couple months ago, clip 14.
Clear that I know that there are protests still happening in major cities across the United States. I'm just not seeing the reporting on it that I had.
That's right.
For the first few weeks.
But they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And this is a movement. I'm telling you, they're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not. And we should not.
They're not going to let up, and they shouldn't, she says. We had the date from August, but I think that's from June. So now they're having to back away from these statements. But that statement, if you counted it, she said this is not going to stop, or they're not going to let up. She said it no less than seven times in a 30-second clip. What about these protests? This is in June. Minneapolis had gone up in flames. She says it's not going to stop. It's going to continue. It's going to continue even after the election. And it should continue. It should. And we're on their side. Everyone, she's telling us, everyone take note. Everyone had better beware. Because this will continue. And it should, she says. And so here they are. There's still plenty of strong voices, even though some are now trying to figure out how we can somehow get back on track politically. There are many, many others who are, just like Rush Limbaugh said in that clip, they're fomenting race riots and civil war. I think we made the comment last week. You wonder how many of them are already resigned to the fact that they're going to lose. And so the civil war is the last resort. Let's take to the streets. Again, we're seeing it. We're seeing some small sampling size, but we're certainly seeing it. This is MSNBC, I think, yesterday. Listen to what this commentator, if you can call her that, says about President Trump. Clip 11.
The president is a criminal. He has no respect for the rule of law. He understands this job as basically a money grab to support the Trump organization and his own individual pockets. And part of the challenge we have as a nation is that a significant swath of Americans still support Donald Trump. They support his vision of America, and that is rooted in racism. It is rooted in a desire for power at the expense of everyone who is black and brown. And so what we have in this problem is a spiritual kind of tyranny.
So as I keep saying, you've got to get 70 million Americans on board with that platform you heard there. We're all racist. It's kind of a spiritual tyranny. Donald Trump is a criminal. Donald Trump he has no respect for the rule of law. It's all a money grab. I think I saw or heard maybe recently where the Obamas are now worth upwards of $1 billion. Outside of politics, they've never really done anything. $1 billion. And here, President Trump, as I said last week, he sets aside his business and comes in to serve the country. There's plenty of voices, just like that one you heard, that want to see a race war. They want to see a civil war. How do you think they'll react if the president wins in a landslide, if the Republicans take back control of the House? Well, as I say, we're getting a glimpse of what's prophesied in Kenosha, in Portland. As I said, you had that shooting death in Portland over the weekend. That Antifa member, shooting the Trump supporter. I guess that I don't know all the details here again, but you see some of the clips of Antifa and Black Lives Matter celebrating the homicide, saying, this is great. I'm not sad that a Trump supporter's dead. I'm glad he's dead. Just the day before that shooting, by the way, the mayor of Portland, he despises President Trump. President Trump over and again has offered to send in federal troops, the National Guard. But this mayor in Portland, radical left-wing mayor, he's refused help from the federal government. His name's Ted Wheeler. And now he's blaming Donald Trump for the violence. The violence has gone on 90 days. And just like Leo Terrell said, the president's offered help and they've refused it. How much longer before Portland, even left-wing Portland, and forgive me, all of you listening from that area, it's a well-known liberal city, and it's being ruined by the mob. It's being ruined by BLM and Antifa. What must the local citizens think that have lived there, that have lived there their whole lives, that have raised their children there? But here's the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, blaming all of it on Donald Trump, as if he's just done this perfect job of leading. And the president, who's all the way across the country in Washington, D.C., it's his fault for what's happening in this man's city. This is Mayor Ted Wheeler, clip 8.
Yesterday's events began with hundreds of cars filled with supporters of the president rallying in Clackamas County and then driving through downtown Portland. They were supported and energized by the president himself.
So there's now Trump supporters showing up in some of these areas, like in Kenosha, where law enforcement is non-existent. They're nowhere to be found. Who could have not anticipated this, by the way? So these Trump supporters show up. Here's a mayor that's watched for going on 90 days as Antifa and BLM have burned down the city or vandalized the city or attacked federal buildings. Now he sees a potential danger because other groups, if they support this presidency, they're the ones fomenting the violence. Here's Mayor Ted Wheeler, yet again, clip 9.
President Trump, for 4 years, we've had to live with you and your racist attacks on black people. We learned early about your sexist attitudes towards women. We've had to endure clips of you mocking a disabled man. We've had to listen to your anti-democratic attacks on journalists. We've read your tweets slamming private citizens to the point of receiving death threats. And we've listened to your attacks on immigrants. We've listened to you label Mexicans rapists. We've heard you say that John McCain wasn't a hero because he was a prisoner of war. And now you're attacking Democratic mayors and the very institutions of democracy that have served this nation well since its founding. Do you seriously wonder, Mr. President, why this is the first time in decades that America has seen this level of violence? It's you who have created the hate and the division. It's you who have not found a way to say the names of black people killed by police officers, even as people in law enforcement have. And it's you who claimed that white supremacists are good people.
So he's got all the talking points down. It's astounding to me. He's standing there alongside the chief of police in Portland. I guess this is what they want. Just refuse any help the president offers and then come out with these lectures, these speeches, saying that it's all his fault. One final clip, clip 10.
And now you want me to stop the violence that you helped create.
What a childish reaction. You want me to help stop the violence that you helped create? It's almost as if he's implying I'm not going to stop the violence. It's all politics. You want me to help stop the violence that you created? Not going to do it. The poor people of Portland, particularly downtown Portland. Pretty amazing. Well, we've dwelt enough on the dearth of leadership, Isaiah 3, and then the problem, the context of that prophecy in Isaiah 2, the problem being the haughtiness, the arrogance, the vanity of so many of these leaders that are just looking out for themselves and not for the people they're presiding over. One last bit here from here in the UK, they had a protest, I guess, yesterday, a peaceful one, all things considered. But it was a reaction to the ongoing lockdown. It's been in place now for months. And so this is in the UK, where I think in many ways they're inclined to just go along with whatever government dictates are put out there, more so maybe than some American states. But these are people in London taking to the streets because they're losing their freedoms because of the pandemic. Here's a sampling, clip 12.
The main reason I'm here is really to stand up for our civil liberties and human rights in the face of a supposed public health emergency, which for the first two or three weeks, I think everyone in the country was probably prepared to give the government the benefit of the doubt that there might be a deadly, contagious pandemic in progress. However, we're now 6 months on, and the Coronavirus Act, which gives the government extraordinary powers, is up for renewal.
The main reason why I'm here is that the severity of COVID has been blown out of proportion, so the measures that are in place are unnecessary when there's things like swine flu had a higher mortality rate than COVID. They bring out mandatory masks, and yet they bring out eat out to help out. So there's loads of people in a restaurant. None of it makes sense. There's too many questions that are unanswered, and people just aren't asking them.
What stands out about that is just the size of the crowd. I also noticed the guy who said Jesus Christ returns coming soon. So good for him. He's out there with his placard. But lots of people disgruntled at this power grab. 6 months on. Remember, it was, at least in the case of the U.S., it was supposed to be 15 days to flatten the curve. Okay, we're going to put this in place. As that one protester said, we were inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt back in March and April, but we're moving into September now. How long does this continue? The CDC website, by the way, over in the States, it quietly updated some of its facts and figures and guidelines with respect to COVID-19. And it says here, this is on the CDC website, for 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID-19, on average, there were 2.6 additional conditions or causes per death. So for 6%, and what has been the total? I think it's at 187,000 in the U.S. now. 6% amounts to about 11,000 deaths overall. 11,000! In a nation that, I'm talking about the United States now, a nation where 8 or 9,000 people per day die every day, every week, every year, in any given year. And of course, it's just increasing because the nation gets bigger, right? And so more and more people die. A lot of people die. And throughout the length of this pandemic, only 11,000 total have died solely from COVID. On average, the other 94%, they have 2.6 additional conditions. Not even just one. It's not like, oh, I've just got diabetes and that's it. 2.6. And then, of course, you know it's aimed primarily at the elderly, especially elderly centers, old folks' homes, as they're called. This from the CDC. Not everyone needs to be tested for COVID-19. These are the guidelines now. These are the updated guidelines saying not everyone needs to be tested. If you have symptoms of COVID-19 and want to get tested, call your healthcare provider first. Most people, listen to this, most people will have mild illness and can recover at home without medical care and may not need to be tested. Don't need to be tested. You probably won't need a hospital bed. You could probably just handle this at home. And oh, by the way, we're considering if we want to extend lockdown, we might have to extend lockdown indefinitely. You hear the story at the top of the hour. The story's on our own. It's not ours, I guess, but we pay for the new service. Every single one of them's on COVID-19, it seems. Still. That's the CDC. The CDC says, based on available evidence, children do not appear to be at higher risk for COVID-19 than adults. But we got to shut down the schools. We've got to have mandatory masks. We've got to stay locked down. If there's anyone still, in light of this, no wonder they're taking to the streets in an actual peaceful protest, that is. But anyone pushing for more lockdowns or for suspending more civil liberties, they're obviously politicizing this disease, or they're just grossly misinformed. Could be the latter, I suppose. But the facts are in. We now have evidence. We now have months of history behind us. We now know. And yet there still are those, going back to the U.S., like Joe Biden, that said, hey, if the expert says it, we'll lock it down again. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Last week in the U.S., the National Basketball Association came very close to just boycotting the rest of the season. First, it's the pandemic that shut everything down, and now it's the social justice warriors that are coming forward saying, look, we're not going to play. And there were probably quite a few voices in America that said, fine, take a break. I noticed this headline over the weekend. LeBron James, Chris Paul received advice from Barack Obama during the stalemate. So here comes the former president. He's got his hands in the U.S. sports leagues. They're relying on the Marxist Barack Obama for counsel. For counsel on what to do with their league. They're already in the bubble. They're only being watched on TV. And the ratings have been terrible. But here they come. They're still getting their fat paychecks, of course. But here they come, threatening to end the season entirely. Listen to Chris Paul. I think he's one of the lead spokesmen for the NBA. This is clip 13.
But what we're doing right now in our league is huge. And I think for the young guys in our league to get a chance to see how guys are really coming together and speak and see real change, real action, because guys are tired. Like, I mean, tired. And I'm saying, when I say tired, we're not physically tired. We're just tired of seeing the same thing over and over again.
And of course, by that, he's talking about police brutality. It's just happening over and over and over and over. Never mind the 36 or so that have been killed in the mobs, in the rioting this past summer. I think it's up to 33 or 34 now, 35. Do those lives matter? So they're seeing it over and over again, and they all speak with one voice, and they all kneel down now, as I said in the first segment. There's not one that I can tell. Is there one conservative in that bubble? Are they all? Is it just like one massive monolith? They've completely shut out half the nation, maybe well over half the nation. We'll get a good read on the election in November of just what side and how many are on each side. But here they are. It's right now, it's a failed business model. They're ruining the league. City Journal has a headline, boycotting themselves out of business. The walkout in support of Blake, who was wanted on sexual assault charge and whose own girlfriend called the cops on him, hardly represents the kind of compelling case against police brutality one might build a mass movement around. But they're building a mass movement around that incident. This sexual predator, his girlfriend called the police to come get rid of him. Now he's a hero. Now he's a martyr. Well, he's not dead, but you understand the point. It says, if players in the midst of a pandemic slowdown already costing professional sports billions of dollars were willing to shut down their industry in this instance, how frequently will they feel compelled or even pressured to do the same in the future? Is this just now going to be routine? Well, it goes on to talk about the declining audiences. Says it's hard to ignore the politics, especially the increasing habit of NBA players and coaches of criticizing the U.S. and its citizens, even while many gave a pass to China, one of the league's biggest new markets, during its crackdown on Hong Kong dissidents. It's all right for the Chinese police to abuse people in Hong Kong. It's all right for the police there to beat them up, to throw them in jail, to persecute them. They don't say one word about that. They reserve all of their hatred for their own nation. The nation that has afforded them all of these millions, this wealth and prosperity. I think LeBron James recently tweeted out something like, I'm terrified. As a black man, I'm terrified. And Jason Whitlock, he's a black commentator, he tweeted out, I'm not. I'm black and I'm not terrified. He's made the point that if you obey the rules, if you obey policemen, if you yield to policemen, you're not going to die, whether white or black. You have a very good chance of surviving if you're obedient, if you're not out breaking the law, if you're not out running away from police or trying to tackle them or bring them to the ground or pulling out a weapon on them. Whitlock said, and I've got an article from him in just a second, Whitlock called Black Lives Matter a divisive, anti-religion, Marxist-influenced movement tearing apart America that's also seduced young athletes. That's Whitlock. He's a black commentator. Now, you know where he got that information? On the Black Lives Matter website, their mission statement. Any one of these spokesmen for the NBA can get to that. Chris Paul can go read it. LeBron James can go read it, but they don't. Or if they have, they don't say a word about it. Here is this Marxist movement. Whitlock says it's tough to love pro athletes right now. They've joined a movement that violates all of sports' traditional tenets. What has happened to sports in the United States? Why is it now so completely politicized? Well, he recently gave a speech at Hillsdale, Whitlock, that is, and that speech became an article in Primus, that publication that goes out, I think, monthly. But he's talking in here how professional athletes and celebrities have replaced mom and dad as the role models for our young people. People are getting onto social media and they see LeBron James saying this, he's terrified, or cursing at the police. And they're like, yeah, I'm on board with that. Whitlock refers back to 1993, this commercial, I think, that Charles Barkley did, where he, and at the time, I guess it was controversial, but Barkley basically said, I'm not a role model. I'm a basketball player. Our parents, your parents, your grandparents, they're the role models. And well, there's a lot of truth to that, but at the time, Barkley got some criticism because the leagues and such, they wanted their athletes to behave, to set a decent example for the community. Seems like such a long time ago. Whitlock says, the elevation of athletes and other celebrities as primary figures in the formation of behavioral norms for young people helped create the conditions that are powering the destructive Black Lives Matter movement today. So here's a commentator, and he's a Black commentator, and he gets it right. He calls out BLM. It says, feminists and other progressive critics of America's patriarchal society, including the Black Lives Matter movement, whose Marxist influenced statement of purpose opposes the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. He's basically saying they're destroying the family. This is where we solve our problems as a community, as a Black community, as a white community. It all gets back to family. And then Whitlock says that technology has helped make matters worse. Kids retiring into their room with all their gadgets, shutting the door, getting on social media. It's a perfect storm. Then he gives some wonderful history. And if you like sports like me, you read through some of this and you think, wow, what a time. And how many breakthroughs, even with respect to race, did the United States see in the 20th century? Jackie Robinson, Jesse Owens, and the like. Muhammad Ali. And these athletes today, these spoiled, rich, little childish athletes, they fancy themselves as a modern-day Jackie Robinson or Jesse Owens. Far from it. It says, indeed, Barack Obama, America's first Black president, the world's first Black leader of a predominantly white country. Did you hear this? The world's first Black leader of a predominantly white country. Where did this happen? The United States of America. Yes, that's right, 2008. And he got reelected. Wow. Even he credited Jackie Robinson's career for his own political rise. Whitlock says, yes, America is a shining example of sports' transformative power. The games we play, the games at the center of our social behavior, combine with our founding principles to enhance the American experience. America's enemies know this, which is why the culture war has moved to our arenas and stadiums. Yes, they want to conquer every field, every arena, every institution. Whitlock says, sports are now in the same crosshairs as our founding fathers, under attack for past racial sins and unappreciated for their vital role in cultivating racial unity. He says, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, but by writing the Declaration of Independence, he made the emancipation of slaves inevitable. This is a Black commentator referring to Thomas Jefferson, praising the Declaration of Independence. Why, that made it inevitable that the slaves would be emancipated. He says, American sports were once segregated, but no American industry can match sports' empowerment of Black men. What an opportunity they have in the United States. Opportunities that they certainly wouldn't have in any other nation on the face of the earth. And so now they want to walk out. They want to ruin their league. That's the spirit and the power of the woke culture. It's so strong. And of course, these ones leading the way, they've got their money, tens of millions of dollars of it. I saw something over the weekend, too, where it said some of the newer players, some of the ones that don't make near as much money as LeBron James, they're not quite as happy with this woke brigade because they haven't gotten theirs yet. And I think they were hurrying to come back and to finish the season once the owners said, look, if you have to cancel everything, we're not going to be able to pay you guys. And then they came back to the court. Well, they're not going to make that kind of a sacrifice. I mean, we can talk about a boycott. We can walk out one day, make our little statement, and then they come back. They've still got the fat checks. And then they say, well, we decided in the end that we have a stronger voice on the court. Okay. Right. What a joke. What a joke. There's not much sincerity in that. And then when they say nothing about China, he has a great section here about China's influence and how Nike, the shoemaker, fits into it. Maybe I can save some of this for tomorrow, as well as some of the scriptures I had. Yes, scriptures on the subjects or the subject of sports. God has a lot to say about sports. We're going through epistles of Paul right now, and Paul over and again in his writings refers to sports analogies to make some great points spiritually. Sports used to be so, as Whitlock brings out, unifying, inspiring, the pursuit of excellence. A lot of that's gone, though. A lot of it's gone. Will it ever come back? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. And thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.